It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. Good stuff today. We have our regular edition of City Hall. We'll meet our guests in just a moment. Very important segment coming up on the second half hour of It's Your Turn today. There is a continuing crisis about blood shortage, blood supply and blood donors here in the tri-state area. You may have heard about this a month or so ago. We did a couple of stories on it. It continues. And we are going to be chatting with the president of the Northeast region of Vitalant, used to be Central Blood Bank. His name is Charlie Wilcox, and we're going to get the whole lowdown on this and what the story is. So that's coming up a little bit later. But first, we welcome the mayor of the city of Butler. Mayor Ben Smith is here. Mayor, good to see you again.
You too.
And also City Councilman Jeff Smith here. Jeff, same thing. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
I was not at City Council last night. Our reporter, Ryan Saylor, was there. But when I saw his stories that he filed for early this morning, I thought it must have been a three-hour meeting. My goodness, you covered a lot of territory last night, Mayor.
We try to do that every week, but yeah, it was a particularly... It wasn't that long of a meeting, but it was a good meeting.
Well, a lot of important stuff, and I'm going to try to budget our time correctly here so that I can get to talk about everything. I think one of the most important things was the story about the... arrests, the charges that have already been filed following the vandalism at Father Marinero Park. This became public within the past couple of weeks. There were complaints from some people, and City Police Chief Bob O'Neill cracked down. They put extra patrols out there, and they've made several charges now against three or four individuals. That's pretty fast police work.
Sure is, yeah. Four different individuals, and obviously, I applaud the police department on everything they do day in and day out, but the stuff in the parks has been particularly good, and I know Jeff has a lot to say about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough good about the work that the chief did. I actually was in the park a couple weeks ago for a meeting of volunteers, and the fellow that was arrested on the motorcycle, I mean, it was literally frightening. He was racing through the park, across the grass fields where they're practicing football, just narrowly missing a couple people. And within a day or two, they had nabbed him. And then the painting that they had done, and it was sort of funny because they did it over a period of two nights. You know, they started out with chalk, and then or somebody started with chalk, and then they followed up with paint. And
this is graffiti there spraying
right,
around. Yeah.
Right. You know, some pornographic images. And what's unfortunate about it is that when they spray that on the ramps, you know, people say, well, just paint over it. It shouldn't be that big of a deal because it's close to $17,000 of damage.
Whew. Wow.
The reason it's so much is that on skate ramps, that's a special kind of wood. You can't paint it. That you know, because the skates slip on it and somebody could be hurt. So all of that wood has to be replaced because of the vandalism. So, you know, when people say, well, these kids are just trying to express themselves, you know, they need to express themselves at home on their family's garage door.
Well, there was one minor, but two adults, young men, and they're facing felony charges, by the way, because of the amount of damage with this graffiti that was painted. So I would agree, Mayor. Hats off to Chief Bob O'Neill and the police. You know, that's pretty fast police work.
Absolutely.
And they're going to keep monitoring that. Father Marinero Park, for folks who don't live in Butler, aren't familiar with it, it's a large park, and it's on the edge of the city, so somewhat remote. And city police have been having extra patrols, really have stepped up the patrols out there, and that's good stuff.
And if I could just throw in, we've already had, you know, we've got a fairly active volunteer group that are working now, and they've already had comments from some of the younger kids who are now also starting to help clean up because they see the progress. And they've thanked the volunteer group because now, you know, they were a little bit afraid before from some of the element that was there. And we're already starting to see a shift. So between the community and the police, it's turning into a good place for families again.
Sometimes you have this, and you just have to shake your head. I know that we're in years gone by, probably not before either of you were on city council. They had some repeated vandalism in Butler Memorial Park, with people vandalizing the restrooms and other areas, and police cracked down on that. You just wonder what gets into people's heads when they do that. Silly stuff. Hey, there's good stuff going on, too. You certainly don't want to focus on the negative. This is a huge weekend in downtown Butler. The Butler Italian Festival will be kicking off 5 o'clock this afternoon. I think the festival opens. A lot of work, however, for the city in the background, the mayor. First of all, police protection. And I understand that the police are going to be really stepping up security for this 3-day festival.
Yeah, we always try to have a good level of security, but you know, with everything that's going on in the world and the country right now, we just want to make certain that there's enough presence to be safe, but not so much presence that people feel like they, you know, can't enjoy themselves too. Mm-hmm. So, certainly going to have, you know, the traffic control, but we always try to have a police presence when there's any kind of large gathering of people that are essentially unvetted, you know, so just people able to come and go. So, the chief has got his people lined up and everything for the festival, and you know, there'll be security there overnight as well for the vendors that you know, they all leave their things set up overnight, so those will all be protected overnight and everything. So we've never had any issues with this particular festival in the past. Don't anticipate any this year either, but you know, never hurts to be safe.
Yeah, and this is not easy to do with the downsizing of the police force that's been necessary over the past few decades. I can remember when I was a little kid, we would come to Butler pretty much every Saturday for shopping trips. And there was a police officer at every intersection. There were police officers that walked the beat up and down Main Street. We had like 3 times the size of the police force back then than we do now. People don't realize that.
Yeah. Fortunately, we're at a point right now where we have full staffing. Well, we are one individual just had started and had another job offer pending, took that. So we're one down, but it should be shortly replaced. But we have full staffing other than that right now, and full staffing for what our expectations are, which is something that hasn't happened in a long time. Usually we have a couple vacancies. So there's certainly, you know, progress in that area. And we do have officers that every day, each officer on their shift walks the beat. A lot of times spent on Main Street. I know that I have a lot of people telling me, like, every time I'm out driving through town, I'm seeing the police car or two going around, and that's good. You don't want it to be a police state, but you also want to make sure that people are safe and they know that people are out there looking for them. But you're right, yes, in the past, the police force was much larger, but we're pretty fortunate right now in the amount of work that the officers do with the you know, the situations that arise on a daily basis, an hourly basis. Mm-hmm. They do a great job with even the limited resources they have.
You're right. We don't want it to seem like a police state, but visibility is important.
Absolutely,
too.
Yeah.
Good to see them around. That also means traffic restrictions, obviously. Jeff Smith, I guess the Main Street's going to shut down to vehicular traffic at 2 o'clock this afternoon for final prep for the opening of the festival. But with all of the obstacles, all of the work that has to be done behind the scenes, it's a great weekend for the downtown area because it's going to be packed with people for 3 straight days.
Yeah, absolutely. It's The last 2 years have been great. I knew the first year it was a new festival and kind of got off to a little slower start with the weather and everything too, but mm-hmm. last year was great. We're expecting great weather this year.
They also moved it because the first year it was over Labor Day weekend.
Right.
And I talked earlier this week here on the program, Michael Dungeli is the organizer, and he said we decided to make it a week before the weekend before Labor Day, and that seems to be very, very popular. So
yeah, it's a week before and also a day shorter than it was that first year.
That's right. Well. It was 4 days. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that.
Yep. Yeah. I think because they use Labor Day as one of those days, which they weren't sure how that would go. You know, you never know with a new event. But last year, the 3 day over the weekend really seemed to work out well, and I think it'll work out well this year, too.
And the weather folks are shining on us, too, for the forecast for the weekend is scary good.
Yeah.
Should be a big crowd.
Right through. Listen, we'll take a break. We'll back. I want to talk with Councilman Jeff Smith about it's an interesting initiative. When I read about it this morning when we were doing the news, the Clean Curb. Is
Clean
what it
Curb
is?
Saturday.
I get the details on this. I think it's a pretty neat thing. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. Nice to have you with us. And we'll be back after these words. One of our sponsors on the program today is Miller Shoes, a presence in downtown Butler for, it's hard to believe, 126 years. Boy, that's tradition. They have literally been headquarters for shoes for generations of families here in this area. And that's no exaggeration, generations. It's back to school time. If you still have a need for kids for tennis shoes or athletic shoes, they've got all the famous name brands at Miller's all under one roof. They also have some great buys as we hit the end of the summer season on sandals, including SAS Comfort Sandals. Are you aware of SAS Comfort Shoes? Most comfortable shoes you'll ever have on. They come in a variety of styles and colors, and Miller's is your local headquarters for SAS shoes. They have sandals, too. Variety of styles there. And famous name brand shoes, too. You get the great selection. You get the famous Miller's fit. Good price. And you get a big smile, too, from the Ciprians. Miller's Shoes, 126 years. On Main Street in downtown Butler, 215 South Main. We'll be right back.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Welcome back. City Hall, we call this, and it's a regular feature here on WISR. I think it's a good idea because it keeps not only the people who live in the city, but our entire area, because, you know, Butler's, it's the urban center of the whole county. It's the county seat. So we like to keep up to date on what's going on in the city of Butler. Let's talk with Councilman Jeff Smith about this initiative called Clean Curb. I never heard of this before. Jeff, what's it all about?
It's a Butler original. You know, Kenny Bonus, who's responsible for the streets, he and I had a conversation. You know, when you drive down a lot of the streets, you'll see the grass that grows up between the curb and the street. And, you know, I know when I go out and mow my grass, I never think to look over there at that grass. And, you know, it can grow up. Part of the problem, one, it's not it's sort of unsightly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you've got that grass growing there, and we get rains. It can be an impediment to the stormwater flow. You know, I'm not looking forward to it, but fall's coming. Leaves are going to be coming off the trees. You know, if that grass is there, it's one more thing that can catch a leaf or two. Pretty soon, you know, you've got a group of leaves or some sort of obstacle. And, you know, there's always the potential that later in the year you could end up with ice there. So the thought was, you know, why not just have a day where we ask everybody to spend 5-10 minutes, go out, look at your curb, pull that grass up, get it cleaned out for fall. Because if we try to do that with city people, with as many streets as there are in town, you know, we could take all the streets guys, we could take all the parks guys, and it would take them days to do what we can all do collectively. And if nothing else, it's sort of a citywide volunteer effort. So I think there's just a lot of positives to it. It's, you know, we're not asking for people to do a lot of work, but, and you know what, if you've got an elderly neighbor who maybe can't get out, hey, maybe people go next door and pull theirs up too. Mm-hmm. So it's a little thing, but it just seemed like a good idea.
I think it's a great idea. And I'm going to, you could use a weed whacker, but probably better to pull it out, yeah. Because if you use a weed whacker, it's going to grow back again. But it would help, whatever. Yeah. You know.
Well, if you use a weed whacker, we'll just have clean curb Saturday every month.
Well, with all the rain we've been getting the past two summers, that's probably true. Speaking of which, Councilman Kenny Bonas last night gave a report on, I guess he's been involved with the meetings with other municipalities in the area. They're trying to take a look at the stormwater problems that we've had, and they've been exacerbated a great deal over the past couple of summers, Mayor, because we've just had such tremendous amounts of rain. Problems not just in the city, but in other municipalities too. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's been a few meetings that Kenny and I have been involved with that, you know, just looking at this regional approach, because there are certainly things that can be done in the city, but the fact of the matter is, we're in the, as we talked about the last time we were on your show, we're at the bottom of the municipalities around us. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely issues that need to be addressed elsewhere too. Not putting that fault on anyone or anything like that, but you know, water runs downhill. That's how it works. So there are issues that we can't really accomplish on our own without working together with the other municipalities, with the county. Everybody's very supportive and open to talking and everything. So nothing hard in stone yet. There have been changing landscapes over the years, and you know, different developments and things like that that have gone on that have contributed to increased water flow into the city. We're just trying to look at some of that together, and so no hard, you know, this is going to fix it. There's certainly not like a one size fits all kind of solution, but just working on establishing where those patterns are happening and what's going on with the different water flows to establish, you know, what, if anything, can be done to ease things outside the city before it gets here, as well as the projects we have going on inside the city.
Well, it's good that officials in neighboring municipalities are made aware of that, because folks, just think, any direction you come into the city of Butler, you're coming downhill. If you come down Newcastle Hill, if you come North Main Street Hill, East Jefferson Street Hill, coming in from Shakora, South Main Street Hill, and the city kind of sits at the bottom of a bowl, and that's where the water ends up.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you look at all of the developments in the suburbs, a lot of asphalt parking lots, a lot of concrete, and most of that's going to end up in the city whenever there's a big rain.
Absolutely.
Now, I know that Butler Township in particular has been very much on top of stormwater management. They have very strict requirements for any new development to have retention ponds and all that sort of thing. But that's something that everybody has to look at.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and they're one of the most, I mean, and this is a good thing in my perspective, they have one of the most restrictive stormwater policies in the area. And but even with that, let's say you do everything possible to prevent things. Sometimes, you know, even if it's not someone's fault, water tables, the natural earth water tables shift, mm-hmm. and things can change without any development even happening. So even with every precaution in the book, sometimes that stuff can happen naturally, and it's just a matter of having to reassess it. Has it changed in the last so many years?
Mm-hmm. We're talking with the mayor of the city of Butler. Mayor Ben Smith is with us. Also, City Councilman Jeff Smith. It's our regular edition of City Hall here today. We are going to be down a councilman here in the near future. I understand that Councilman Corey Roche is going to have to resign. He's moving away.
Yeah, Councilman Roche, or I guess in a couple days here, Corey, got another job with his same company. He got a promotion, working in Jacksonville, Florida. So he's going to be moving down south. He'll have some increased responsibilities there, and they needed him there as soon as possible. I think he actually was able to get them to extend it to finish up some work responsibilities he has here before he moves down. So he'll be done at the end of the month here, and then he was already planning on not running for re-election. And so there's already, you know, that seat is already going to be, well, either way, he would have had, it would have been up for election. But so for the next, let's see, September through December, 4 months, or as soon as we get someone appointed, hopefully sometime in September, someone will serve and then someone new will take the place. Or I shouldn't say someone new, but someone will be elected to the position in November for January to serve a full four-year term. So, yeah, we are kind of soliciting applications. People who are interested should send a letter to City Council expressing their interest, and we'll be taking a look over those.
And Jeff Smith, that's how that works. The remaining members of City Council then will vote on a temporary replacement?
Right. Yeah, the council, the remaining members of council vote from the candidates, select somebody. You know, if for whatever reason we didn't, you know, it could go to the court system where the courts would assign somebody, but that won't happen. We'll, I'm sure we'll have a number of good applicants, and we'll reach a consensus on who can do the best job for 3.5 months.
And this is one of the two seats that's up for election this year anyway, in November.
Right.
It's two seats, right?
That's correct, yeah.
There are five total seats on City Council, and they alternate two seats, and then the next time it'll be three seats that are up for election. So,
right.
We wish good luck to Corey Rose. That's quite a move. That's not like moving to Shakora.
Right, yeah. It's a good move for him. I think it'll be good for his career. And, you know, I think everybody on council last night expressed our gratitude and thanks to him. He's been great to work with, and he reciprocated that feeling, I think, too. So.
Well, I hope he pledged not to become a Jacksonville Jaguar fan. Moved down there.
I know he'll be working on that venue down there, so it's who knows what could happen.
Deep inside, he'll probably be a Steelers fan. He may have to wear the shirt.
You know, I lived in Jacksonville.
Really?
When the Jaguars were formed, when their first year I lived there. Actually, longer than that, but yeah. So I guess it's still the same stadium as far as I'm aware, but.
I don't know. I drove through Jacksonville twice.
Yeah.
Once on my way down to Miami, and once on my way back.
Yeah. Yeah, I told him I live there. Have fun. You know, good luck. Because I don't remember. I was a kid, but I don't remember enjoying the climate there.
We're chatting with the mayor of the city, Butler. Mayor Ben Smith is here, and Councilman Jeff Smith as well. What a nice gift that was announced last night from a couple of local clubs, Mayor. I think that deserves a mention here, don't you?
Yes, I do. The Italian Club and the French and Belgian Club donated a total of $10,000 towards the Streets Department for a new vehicle for the Streets Department. So I know they had written a letter about, you know, they had a local tournament and everybody kind of, whoever won got to pick the loser's donation. Which is, you know, well, seems like a lot of fun to me. So they were able to donate that, and then they made an additional donation as well from their funds towards the city streets department. So definitely appreciative of that. We thank them for their service to the community, their donation as well. And I know that'll be put to good use in the streets department in the form of paying for a portion of a vehicle that's going to be purchased.
That's a sizable gift, too.
Absolutely.
$10,000, yeah. I think it's great when organizations find their way clear to do that. I wish more of the nonprofits would at least make a gesture of donation in lieu of taxes to the city. I've said that for many, many years. I know a few do, but it would be nice if more did because they get fire protection, they get police protection. And
yeah, there are a select few, and we really appreciate that, but certainly anyone who is not, it would be very well appreciated, very highly appreciated if they did so, yeah.
We did a story this morning on the city looking at options to possibly monetize their parking assets, and someone at the station here asked me, what the heck does that mean, monetize your parking assets? And I suppose, Councilman Jeff Smith, that is a confusing term for some people. So let's talk about monetizing your parking assets 101. What the heck does that mean anyway?
Yeah, I'm not sure where the term comes from, but it means sell it. And we're not necessarily interested in selling. One of the things that we decided early on was that you know, we've got a parking system, and it would be good to know what it's worth. And you know, I could tell you what I thought it was worth. The mayor could tell you what he thought it's worth. But you know, things are generally worth what people are willing to pay for them. So we thought, well, let's go ahead and see if there's interest in our parking system. What the city has done that I think is really smart. Most times when municipalities sell off these kind of assets, whether they're parking systems, water systems, you know, the city did that several years ago, mm-hmm. Sewer systems, whatever, lots of times they wait until they're financially in trouble. The city's not. We don't have to sell the parking system. So it's a good time to find out what it's worth, if it makes sense to sell it to a commercial venture, because you know, parking really isn't a core competency of municipal government, then we can do it. If it doesn't make sense, we can keep operating it because we're not losing money from the system. So the timing's good, and we're going to see what it would be worth to monetize it.
There are companies, I guess, that do this, Mayor.
Yeah, there are companies that's all they do. They manage parking systems. They do it in multiple cities. I have found out more about parking companies in the last 6 months than I ever thought was possible. Mm-hmm. But there are, yeah, they're just like anything else. You know, there are groups that manage entire groups of restaurants. There are groups that manage entire groups of venues, music or sports or whatever, and there are groups that manage parking systems as well.
I had not heard of it, but then someone told me, because this surfaced a year or so ago, it's mm-hmm. not brand new in the city, but someone told me that it's analogous to, I think it was the state of Indiana that leased their turnpike system mm-hmm. some years ago to an outside company, and in fact, Governor Tom Corbett, I think, was looking at doing that with the Pennsylvania Turnpike. That never went through. But this would be analogous to that, I guess, right? A company would take over management, and then they would set the parking rates. They would collect the money, and then they would give the city a percentage, or they'd give you an upfront fee, or you negotiate that.
It all depends, yeah. So, it depends on what they, if we were to decide to sell it, depends on what kind of offer they would make. So some may make an outright offer of, we'll just buy it, and they'll take it, and we won't do anything with it. There may be someone who says, we want to buy it and collect the profits, but we'll pay you to still manage it. There may be a company that says, why don't we lease it from you for 20 years and then we'll give it back to you at the end.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, there's, I'm not saying any of those are necessarily on the table. I'm just saying that there are many different options, you know, kind of like when you're buying anything. When you're buying a car, you could say, I want it for this much and these are the options I want. A company could do that with the parking system as well if they so desired.
And depending on whatever arrangement you came up with, if indeed you decide to go this way, it could possibly relieve the city, I'm guessing, of some expense like constant repair of parking meters, which I understand, by the way, is very difficult these days with the older meters that the city has because it's hard to get parts for them anymore.
And there aren't a whole lot of people out there that know how to do it either. Yeah. But the thing, though, I want to reiterate, like Jeff said, is that you know, the system, it's not the parking system is not a drain on us currently. It's a beneficial thing. So it would certainly have to be, I mean, it's not something we want to do frivolously or anything. And like he said, we don't have to sell it. So it's a matter of exploring options and seeing what kind of interest there is, if any. We know there's interest, but seeing what kind of interest there is. And then who knows, we may be able to garner some beneficial knowledge from that as well.
Mm-hmm. And actually, his car analogy is a great one. The difference between when you're sitting at home thinking, you know, I'd sort of like to have a new car, and you start looking through the brochures, and that's sort of where we are, as opposed to when you're sitting along the side of the road and there's white smoke coming out from your hood. We're not there.
Good idea, and it may be the way of the future. Who knows? You know, that may be what a lot of cities are doing.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, listen, guys, thanks for stopping in. It's always good to talk to you, and it's always good to get some of the background information on what's happening in the city.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
Pleasure being here.
Butler City Councilman Jeff Smith with us here today, and the mayor of the city of Butler, Ben Smith, as well. Please stick around. We have an important segment coming up. We're going to be chatting with the president of the Northeast region of Vitalant. Have you heard that name before? Yeah, it's a new name. It used to be Central Blood Bank. Vitalant is the new name. It's actually, from what I understand, just as we were talking about parking, it's a regional system of blood banks now. It's a company that manages. We'll get all the details on that. We'll be talking to the president. His name is Charlie Wilcox. He's not in Butler. We'll be joining him. He'll be joining us by telephone in just a couple of minutes. So stick around. More of It's Your Turn for a Friday coming up after these words. Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby is not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler. Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, also emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available. Also, prescription diets. You know, one of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. Microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south at Thorncrest Drive.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Folks, coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR this afternoon, and if you're joining us a little bit late, my name is Dave Malarkey. We're going to be talking about a critical shortage of blood supplies and blood donors, and we're going right to the source on this. Visiting with us via the telephone today is Charlie Wilcox. Charlie is the president of Vitalant's Northeast region. Charlie, this is the first time we've had a chance to talk. It's nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us here today.
Oh, it's great to meet you, too. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We first did a news story about the critical shortage of blood and the need for blood donors, I don't know, a month or so ago. It was earlier this summer. And I just wanted to make sure that our listeners and everybody knew that this is still an ongoing problem. It wasn't, you know, a one-and-done thing back in June. It's still a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the issues really come over a long period of time. Literally, the number of volunteer blood donors we've had in our community has dropped 50% per year during the last 10 years. So literally, it's a matter now that the donor base meaning the number of wonderful individuals voluntarily rolling up their sleeves to donate blood, that our donor base is no longer large enough to support our patient needs, and we've been in a constant state of shortage now for months.
Let's talk a little bit about the name Vitalant. That may be unfamiliar to many of our listeners because we were used to hearing the term Central Blood Bank. There's been a name change, right?
Yes, we sure have, and it's a same good mission and same good people, just a different name. We've now joined in. What was always been known here, Central Blood Bank, has joined with a network of blood centers across the country called Vitalant. And if you move from city to city, you'll see that same name. But again, it's a new name here, but the same good mission.
And we might also point out that Vitalant provides blood products to Allegheny Health Network, to UPMC Health Systems, and I believe to Butler Memorial Hospital as well. Am I correct on that, Charlie?
That is correct. We serve basically most all of the hospitals in the greater Pittsburgh area. We serve 50 hospitals. It certainly includes Butler Memorial and the UPMC Hospital in Cranberry and just basically all the big hospitals that we all are used to going to.
Well, let's start with blood donation 101. Why do we need people to donate blood? You've had a tremendous drop-off in the number of blood donors over the past decade, I guess, huh?
Yeah, as far as the need, you know, it's funny. Modern science has done many miraculous things over the years, but one thing they've not been able to do is replicate human blood. There is no artificial source of blood. If you're a patient in a hospital who's had an accident or undergoing cancer treatment or had a trauma of some sort or surgery and you need blood, there is no other source of it other than another human being voluntarily rolling up their sleeves and donating that precious gift. If you're in surgery, you may well need the red cells from the blood. If you're in cancer treatment, you likely will need platelets. If you're a burn victim, you'll probably need plasma. Again, all that comes from volunteer blood donors.
I think it's important that you mention that, Charlie Wilcox, because, you know, medicine has advanced so tremendously in just the past couple of decades. I mean, we have heart transplants now, for goodness sakes, knee replacements, all that stuff. A lot of people might not realize there is no substitute for blood. You need the real thing.
Absolutely. Now, what modern science has done is they've learned how to, for example, make better use of the blood. So, for example, a single blood donation, they'll literally take your blood donation and will spin the red cells off in one bag and the platelets off in another and the plasma off in a third and literally help three patients with that one donation. So those advancements have helped us.
What about, can you kind of follow the trail? What happens when somebody donates blood? What happens over the next few hours or the next couple of days, Charlie?
Yes, I'd love to. Obviously, first of all, when someone donates blood, obviously the actual donation process, you should be in the building about an hour. We'll initially ask you a number of medical questions to make sure it's healthy for you to donate blood, but also your blood to be good for the patient. And we'll do a little mini physical. We'll check your iron level and blood pressure and pulse and just do a basic physical, again to make sure it's safe for you to donate and that your blood will be good for the patient. We then will actually collect the blood from you. The actual collection of the blood takes about 15 minutes. Then we'll have you sit in a canteen area and sip some refreshments and eat a cookie or two until we know you're ready to be on your way. All told, each will be there about an hour. We then will take that unit of blood back to our blood center, our main processing center in Pittsburgh, and we literally will take the blood and we'll spin it into the components I talked about a minute ago. We'll literally spin off the red cells, spin off the plasma, spin off the platelets, and produce three separate products. We also will take the test tubes from the site that we draw with the unit of blood and send those to our centralized testing facility where there'll be about 20 tests performed on that blood. We'll test it for hepatitis. We'll test it for HIV. We'll test it for a number of ailments. We'll also type it, determine your blood type, and also check for any special antibodies you might have. So basically that processing of the blood takes about 24 to 36 hours. Once all the test results are in, we'll be notified, and then we'll actually label the unit of blood, and once we we've labeled it and put the blood type on it and labeled it as passing all the tests, we then will send that blood to the hospitals for them to put on the shelf to be there when needed. So again, the actual, from the time you donate blood, it's about 2 days before that blood is actually out in a hospital ready for a patient.
And that's critical. And again, something that a lot of people may not understand, because sometimes we have an emergency, something like the horrible mass shootings that we've had in recent weeks, and then, you know, people will rush to donate blood. But that's not going to be immediately available for the people who need it. You need to have that stuff in reserve.
That's right. That's the hard thing to get across in many cases is, you know, the blood has to be there before it's needed. Now, it's great that people come in afterwards to help us replenish the blood supply, because we'll need to replenish it, but the actual blood that saved those victims was donated 2 days before you had any idea there was going to be a disaster, which kind of causes me to try to change the mindset a bit of folks to say, look, disasters happen every day in our community. They may not make the headlines, they may not make the front page, but they happen every day. If I've been in an auto wreck and need blood, I've had a disaster in my life. If I'm undergoing surgery, that's probably a little bit of a disaster in my life. So those kind of disasters need as much attention as the big dramatic ones that make the front page. So the bottom line is, in the greater Pittsburgh area, there are about 600 units of blood transfused every day on the average. So we need to average about 600 volunteer blood donors every day in our community just to keep up and to be have the blood there before it's needed.
Wow. We're talking, listeners, if you've joined us a couple of minutes late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Charlie Wilcox. He visits with us by telephone. Mr. Wilcox is president of Vitalance in Northeast Region. So we need the blood for scheduled surgery. We need it for oncology patients, cancer patients, and of course, if there are any emergencies. What kind of reserve do we have right now? Little, or in some cases, none, I guess, huh?
Well, yeah, that's where it's kind of scary. We've always believed we should have at least a 3-day supply of blood on our shelves all the time in case something big happens, or, you know, whether it's weather or a disaster or whatever. So that's what we target. And right now we have less than a 1-day supply on our shelf, and that leaves us very uneasy, because if something, you know, if there was something massive that happened right now, it just scares me to even think about it.
This may be a stupid question, but I've wondered about this. Once you get a blood donation and you get the unit and so on and so forth, and it gets to the hospital, does it have to be refrigerated until it's used? You talked about putting it on the shelf.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. The shelf literally is a shelf in a refrigerator. And if you donate blood at a blood drive, you'll literally see us, after you've donated blood, take the blood and put it in an ice chest until we can get it back and refrigerate it properly. And again, there's different answers for different products. In the case of red cells, yes, it's definitely refrigerated. Platelets are often kept at room temperature. So again, there's a little bit of variation depending on product, but the main product, red cells, is refrigerated.
You mentioned blood types earlier, Charlie Wilcox, and I'm trying to reach deep back into my health classes a long time ago. There's AB, there's type O. Is that still the same from what I remember when?
You've done pretty good. You've remembered well. There's 8 basic blood types. There's O positive and O negative, A positive, A negative, B positive, B negative, and AB positive, AB negative. The most common are type O and type A. The most common in the donor base are type O and type A. The most commonly used is type O, because type O is more of a universal blood type, so it's in higher demand. So we're always especially eager to find our type O positive and O negative blood donors.
One other question, and again, it may be a silly one, but I remember something about, I think it was called an Rh factor. Is that still a consideration?
Yes, that's the positive and the negative.
Oh, okay. You know,
when I talked about A positive, okay, that means they have this Rh factor. A negative do not have the Rh factor. Well, you remember well, Dave.
Well, I remember partial information. I didn't remember that was considered positive and negative. Well, just interesting, I think, for our listeners. You mentioned that the blood is tested. There are a variety of tests that it undergoes before it's available. What are some of the typical conditions that would preclude someone from donating blood or their blood being used, Charlie Wilcox?
Well, first of all, in general, if you're in general good health, if you're feeling well today and in general good health and not in a treatment for any major problems, there's a pretty good chance that you're eligible to donate blood. But there are certain things, like have you had a history of hepatitis? Have you traveled to a malarial zone in the last 12 months? Now, just because you've traveled to a malarial zone doesn't mean you have malaria, but for example, we're not 100% confident in our tests for malaria, so in addition to testing for it, we also will ask you, have you traveled to a malarial zone in the last year? And if you have, you'll be deferred for a year. So there's travel questions that are related, kind of like to what I just said about if you've gone to a certain endemic area, we just want to be safe and wait a year before we draw blood from you. Tattoos is a big one. Have you had a tattoo in the last year? If you had a tattoo at a licensed tattoo parlor, you can donate blood. If you had a tattoo at an unlicensed tattoo parlor, because of the fear of hepatitis, we'll ask you to wait 1 year before you donate blood. The problem we have in Pennsylvania is the state does not license tattoo parlors, so every tattoo in Pennsylvania technically came from an unlicensed parlor, so it's a 1 year deferral. There's a lot of very specific things like that. The list is long, but in general, as a rule of thumb, if you're in generally good health, you likely can donate blood, but if you have questions, we can provide a phone number and an email website to ask about your eligibility if you want to know for sure before you drive in.
Have the thoughts of becoming a caregiver for your parents been on your mind a lot lately? Maybe you're thinking about your own life in a few years. Pretty overwhelming, and you don't know where to turn. Let me suggest attorney Michael Pater. He handles each account like they were his own mom and dad. For elder law issues, wills, power of attorney, living wills, trusts, and more, call attorney Michael Pater at the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center, downtown Butler, at 287-7724. Representing individuals, families, and businesses for over 26 years is attorney Michael Pater, 287-7724.
Butler Health System is a top 100 hospital for getting Doug back to playing with his grandkids and managing his farm.
For ensuring that Craig made it to his daughter's college graduation.
For helping Ray travel to Europe to visit his family.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide nationally recognized care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
When it's time to choose a funeral home, there are many things to consider. The facility itself, does it provide the atmosphere that the occasion requires? Are they people I can comfortably talk with about the kind of services I need? Is the cost within my budget? Should we consider cremation? There are so many questions. Let Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler help you with some answers. After all, Thompson Miller has been serving the Butler community since 1927. The same family has been serving Butler for 92 years. They are in many ways truly a part of our community. Thompson Miller provides complete services with dignity in the funeral home, at gravesite, and for entombment. Thompson Miller will help you through the process with advice, counsel, experience, and compassion. Call us and we'll help you make these important and sensitive decisions. 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit us online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Well, don't look now, but the high school football season starts this Friday night. Hi, everyone. This is Scott Briggs inviting you to join Dave Bacon and me as once again we follow the Knock Knights. The Knights will open their home season this Friday night against the Hampton Talbots in a non-conference game, and we'll have all the action. We'll be on the air at 6:30 with new head football coach Brandon Mowry. 6:45, we're live at Knock for the 7 o'clock kickoff. Knock football here on WISR this season, presented in part by the Butler Health System, the law firm of Conlon Tarker, United Plate Glass in Butler, Kelly's Restaurant on Main Street in Saxonburg, Next Tier Bank, the John W. Thrower Cement Corporation of Saxonburg, Tri Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, and the law firm of Dylan McCandless, King, Coulter, and Graham. It's Knock Football this Friday night right here on WISR, WISR680.com, and as always, on the Trib Live High School Sports Network.
I have a couple of more questions for Charlie Wilcox, president of Vitalance Northeast Region. We're talking about what has become, listeners, and this is real news, a public health crisis, the lack of blood reserves here in the tri-state area, and that includes for Butler Memorial Hospital and Allegheny Health Network and UPMC, all of the hospitals in the tri-state area. Is there any research, Charlie Wilcox, in why there's been a drop-off in blood donations? Why is it that some people are hesitant to give blood? Do we know?
And yeah, there's obviously, first of all, it's something that anyone who hasn't given blood before is found to be a little nervous about it. It sounds kind of scary, and once you've done it, you kind of laugh at yourself because it's not all that scary. It does involve a needle and does involve 15 minutes of actually donating blood, but certainly part of it is just we're all nervous and apprehensive about it and need our hand held a bit when it happens. But as far as the general decline in the donor base, Dave, there's some logical reasons for it. One is, quite frankly, aging baby boomers. I'm one of those aging baby boomers, so I can say that. We're getting older now, which means we're more likely to begin to have reasons why we can't still donate blood. Now, there's no upper age limit to donating blood, but we're still more likely to begin to have our own health issues. So, and the baby boomers have been the backbone of our nation's blood donor base for the last four decades. So part of it is just, and what I also refer to as our baby boomers' journey from blood donors to blood users, which is kind of the reality of what's happening to us, which means we've got to bring along those next generations of blood donors. And, you know, in this busy, busy society we have with, you know, so much going on, it's we're still struggling with how to get the message right and how to reach out to those audiences. But so the number one reason for the shrinking donor base is aging baby boomers. Another reason, which is kind of a positive reason in a way, in our quest to make donating blood and receiving blood as safe as possible, we are being very cautious in who we let donate blood. For example, if you're a blood donor and you come in and we determine you have a low iron level, we're going to ask you not to donate for your health. Or if you've got high blood pressure that's not under control, we'll ask you to donate blood to not donate blood for your health, which is good for you, but it shrinks the donor base. If you've been to malarial zones or recently gotten a tattoo, we'll ask you to not donate blood for a year. That's for the patient's safety, so it's good for the patient, but it shrinks the donor base. So part of it is our own quest for safety, which is good. It also tends to shrink the donor base. But the big issue is just our busy society and how do you get your message across when there's so many messages coming at us, all of us, each and every day, as you well know.
I'm glad you mentioned high blood pressure, hypertension. I forgot to ask you about that earlier in our conversation. That would be something that would preclude you donating, and that's, I'm sure, one of the reasons why.
And you know, that's one of the things I want to, that's never a simple yes or no answer. If you take medication, your blood pressure is under control, yes, you can donate blood. But obviously, if you come in to donate blood and your blood pressure is through the roof, we're going to ask you not to donate blood. People often ask about cancer and it all depends with the type of cancer and whether, you know, how long ago it was. There's 100 different answers to that question. So if you've had a history of cancer and are currently fine, but have had a history of it and aren't sure, call us on the phone or go to our website and save yourself a trip and make sure. In some cases you can donate, in some cases you can't. There's hundreds of different scenarios. I can't begin to remember them all.
It doesn't hurt to give blood. Sure, there's a pinprick when you get the needle. It's like getting a flu shot. Then after that, it's fine. You're kind of lying there in a lounge type thing, and you give the blood, and big deal. Here's a question some people might ask, Charlie Wilcox. So I give a unit of blood. How long does it take my body to regenerate the blood that I've given? It's really not very long, is it?
It's not, your red cells come back very quickly. Some of the components of the blood take a little longer, but we do ask you to wait at least 56 days before donating blood again. So basically, you can donate blood once every 8 weeks. You actually recover your blood volume much quicker than that, but again, we tend to want to err on the side of being conservative. So you can donate blood once every 56 days. And by the way, something we didn't mention earlier, blood has a shelf life. You can't just collect tons of blood today and keep it on the shelf for the next year. Blood literally has a 42-day shelf life, so it's got to be used within that time frame also.
Something I didn't realize. Well, let's wrap up our conversation here. Hopefully we've raised the awareness of a lot of people about this continuing crisis. It's not something that has gone away over the past couple of months. What can we do here in Butler County to help, Charlie Wilcox? Can we call to make an appointment to donate, or what do we do?
Yeah, Dave, absolutely. First of all, there's a phone number we have. You can call to make an appointment. It is 412-209-7000. That's 412-209-7000. And there's a website. It's vitalant.org. That's vitalant.org. Those are two ways you can ask questions about your eligibility or find out the nearest location to donate blood. But we do have two regularly routine places, or one routine place to give in the Butler area, and that is we have a donation center at the Butler Health System, 127 Oneida Valley Road in Butler County, and it's open Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon until 7 p.m., and it's open Friday and Saturday from 7:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., and then there's also a frequent blood drives in town. I know we have one September 5th at Butler Memorial Hospital, for example. So multiple opportunities to donate blood, and just call the number or go to the website to double-check on those.
Charlie, you're a wealth of information. It's good that we talked today. Charlie Wilcox, president of Vitalant's Northeast Region. Good to have you with us, Charlie.
Dave, thank you very much. Appreciate your help and appreciate everybody who donates blood to help save lives. Thank you.
When game day arrives, we take you with us to every stadium.
Touchdown, Pittsburgh! You've got to be here!
This is Bill Hillgrove. Join me along with Tony Chilkin, Craig Wolfley, and Missy Matthews as we bring you Steelers football with the pregame interviews, the game itself, and postgame analysis. No one covers the black and gold like the Pittsburgh Steelers Football Network.
The Pittsburgh Steelers play their third preseason game in Tennessee this Sunday evening. We'll be on the air with the pregame at 6 o'clock, kickoff at 8 o'clock. Pittsburgh Steelers football brought to you in part by Aqua Solutions, Schneider 1-Hour Heating and Air Conditioning, Armco Credit Union, and attorney Michael Pater.
We thank our guests. Certainly nice to chat with Charlie Wilcox, and prior to that, the mayor of the city of Butler, Mayor Ben Smith, with us, along with Butler City Councilman Jeff Smith. Program note, it's a book talk day on Monday. You know, we do this once a month in cooperation with the Butler County Federated Libraries System. The various public libraries in Butler County take turns choosing a book and then sending a representative to talk about it, kind of an on-air book review. The South Butler Community Library in Saxonburg for this month has chosen the book Midnight in Chernobyl. This is not a novel. This is a nonfiction story of that a horrible disaster, the world's greatest nuclear disaster. It happened some 30 years ago. And this is the untold story of Midnight in Chernobyl. It is a really sobering read. So we'll talk about that with folks from the South Butler Community Library on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. And enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the fine weather. Activities you're planning on attending, including the Butler Italian Festival, looks like great weather for it. Our temperature is up to 70 degrees, predicted high 72. All we need to do is get a little sunshine, I think, and we'll get there, but We've seen some persistent cloud cover over the past couple of hours. No rain in the forecast. Just not quite as much sunshine as we might like to see. I'm Dave Malarkey. Thanks for being with us today, and hope you can join us on Monday at 12:30 for the next edition of It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Man that